at the coming of my anger, and they dared not face it while the sun was in the sky. But they closed round at night, and I was besieged at the hilltop in the old ring of Amon-Sul. I was hard put to it indeed. Such light and flame cannot have been seen on Weathertop since the war beacons of old. At sunrise I escaped and fled towards the north. I could not hope to do more. It was impossible to find you, Frodo, in the wilderness, and it would have been folly to try with all the nine at my heels. So I had to trust to Aragorn. But I hoped to draw some of them off, and yet reach Rivendell ahead of you and send out help. Four riders did indeed follow me, but they turned back after a while and made for the ford, it seems. That helped a little. For there were only five, not nine, when your camp was attacked. I reached here at last by a long, hard road, up the Horwell and through the Etten Moors and down from the north. It took me nearly 14 days from Weathertop, for I could not ride among the rocks of the Troll Fells, and Shadowfax departed. I sent him back to his master, but a great friendship has grown between us, and if I have need, he will come at my call. But so it was that I came to Rivendell only 3 days before the ring, and news of its peril had already been brought here, which proved well indeed. And that, Frodo, is the end of my account. May Elrond and the others forgive the length of it, but such a thing has not happened before, that Gandalf broke tryst and did not come when he promised. An account to the ring-bearer of so strange an event was required, I think. Well, the tale is now told, from first to last. Here we all are, and here is the ring. But we have not yet come any nearer to our purpose. What shall we do with it? There was silence. At last, Elrond spoke again. "This is grievous news concerning Saruman," he said, "for we trusted him, and he is deep in all our counsels. It is perilous to study too deeply the arts of the enemy, for good or for ill, for such falls and betrayals, alas, have happened before. Of the tales that we have heard this day, the tale of Frodo was most strange to me. I have known few hobbits, save Bilbo here, and it seems to me that he is perhaps not so alone and singular as I had thought him. The world has changed much since I was last on the westward roads. The Barrow Wights we know by many names, and of the old forest many tales have been told. All that now remains is but an outlier of its northern march. Time was when a squirrel could go from tree to tree, from what is now the Shire to Dunland west of Isengard. In those lands I journeyed once, and many things wild and strange I knew. But I had forgotten Bombadil, if indeed this is still the same that walked the woods and hills long ago, and even then was older than the old. That was not then his name. Eowyn Benardar we called him, oldest and fatherless. But many another name he has since been given by other folk. Faun by the dwarves, Orald by northern men, and other names besides. He is a strange creature, but maybe I should have summoned him to our council.
He would not have come, said Gandalf.
Could we not send messages to him and obtain his help? Asked Erestor. It seems that he has a power even over the ring.
No, I should not put it so, said Gandalf. Say rather that the ring has no power over him. He is his own master. But he cannot alter the ring itself, nor break its power over others. And now he is withdrawn into a little land, within bounds that he has set, though none can see them, waiting perhaps for a change of days, and he will not step beyond them.
But within these bounds nothing seems to dismay him, said Aristor. Would he not take the ring and keep it there, for ever harmless?
No, said Gandalf, not willingly. He might do so, if all the free folk of the world begged him, but he would not understand the need. And if he were given the ring, he would soon forget it, or most likely throw it away. Such things have no hold on his mind. He would be a most unsafe guardian, and that alone is answer enough.
But in any case, said Glorfindel, to send the ring to him would only postpone the day of evil. He is far away.
We could not now take it back to him, unguessed, unmarked by any spy. And even if we could, soon or late the Lord of the Rings would learn of its hiding place and would bend all his power towards it. Could that power be defied by Bombadil alone? I think not. I think that in the end, if all else is conquered, Bombadil will fall, last as he was first, and then night will come. I know little of Iarwain save the name, said Galdor, but Glorfindel, I think, is right. Power to defy our enemy is not in him, unless such power is in the earth itself. And yet we see that Sauron can torture and destroy the very hills.
What power still remains lies with us, here in Imladris, or with Círdan at the Havens, or in Lorien. But have they the strength? Have we here the strength to withstand the enemy, the coming of Sauron at the last, when all else is overthrown?
I have not the strength, said Elrond, neither have they. Then if the ring cannot be kept from him forever by strength, said Glorfindel, two things only remain for us to attempt, to send it over the sea or to destroy it.
But Gandalf has revealed to us that we cannot destroy it by any craft that we here possess, said Elrond.
And they who dwell beyond the sea would not receive it. For good or ill, it belongs to Middle-earth. It is for us who still dwell here to deal with it.
Then, said Glorfindel, let us cast it into the deeps, and so make the lies of Saruman come true. For it is clear now that even at the council his feet were already on a crooked path. He knew that the ring was not lost for ever, but wished us to think so, for he began to lust for it for himself. Yet oft in lies truth is hidden. In the sea it would be safe.
Not safe for ever, said Gandalf. There are many things in the deep waters, and seas and lands may change. And it is not our part here to take thought only for a season, or for a few lives of men, or for a passing age of the world. We should seek a final end of this menace, even if we do not hope to make one.
And that we shall not find on the roads to the sea, said Galdor. If the return to Iarwain be thought too dangerous, then flight to the sea is now fraught with gravest peril. My heart tells me that Sauron will expect us to take the western way when he learns what has befallen. He soon will. The Nine have been unhorsed indeed, but that is but a respite. Here they find new steeds and swifter. Only the waning might of Gondor stands now between him and a march in power along the coasts into the north. And if he comes, assailing the White Towers and the Havens, hereafter the elves may have no escape from the lengthening shadows of Middle-earth.
Long yet will that march be delayed, said Boromir. Gondor wanes, you say, but Gondor stands, and even the end of its strength is still very strong.
And yet its vigilance can no longer keep back the Nine, said Galdor, and other roads he may find that Gondor does not guard.
Then, said Aristor, there are but two courses, as Glorfindel already has declared, to hide the ring forever or to unmake it. But both are beyond our power. Who will read this riddle for us?
None here can do so, said Elrond gravely. At least none can foretell what will come to pass if we take this road or that. But it seems to me now clear which is the road that we must take. The westward road seems easiest. Therefore it must be shunned. It will be watched. Too often the elves have fled that way. Now at this last we must take a hard road, a road unforeseen. There lies our hope, if hope it be, to walk into peril, to Mordor. We must send the ring to the fire.
Silence fell again. Frodo, even in that fair house, looking out upon a sunlit valley filled with the noise of clear waters, felt a dead darkness in his heart. Boromir stirred, and Frodo looked at him. He was fingering his great horn and frowning. At length he spoke.
I do not understand all this, he said. Saruman is a traitor, but did he not have a glimpse of wisdom? Why do you speak ever of hiding and destroying, Why should we not think that the great ring has come into our hands to serve us in the very hour of need? Wielding it, the free lords of the free may surely defeat the enemy. That is what he most fears, I deem. The men of Gondor are valiant, and they will never submit. But they may be beaten down. Valor needs first strength, and then a weapon. Let the ring be your weapon. If it has such a power as you say, take it and go forth to victory.
Alas, no, said Elrond. We cannot use the ruling ring. That we now know too well. It belongs to Sauron and was made by him alone and is altogether evil. Its strength, Boromir, is too great for anyone to wield at will, save only those who have already a great power of their own. But for them it holds an even deadlier peril. The very desire of it corrupts the heart. Consider Saruman. If any of the wise should with this ring overthrow the Lord of Mordor, using his own arts, he would then set himself on Sauron's throne, and yet another Dark Lord would appear. And that is another reason why the ring should be destroyed. As long as it is in the world, it will be a danger even to the wise. For nothing is evil in the beginning. Even Sauron was not so. I fear to take the ring to hide it. I will not take the ring to wield it.
Nor I, said Gandalf.
Boromir looked at them doubtfully, but he bowed his head.
So be it, he said. Then in Gondor we must trust to such weapons as we have. And at the least, while the wise ones guard this ring, we will fight on. Maybe the sword that was broken may still stem the tide, if the hand that wields it has inherited not an heirloom only, but the sinews of the kings of men.
Who can tell? Said Aragorn. But we will put it to the test one day.
May the day not be too long delayed, said Boromir. For though I do not ask for aid, we need it. It would comfort us to know that others fought also with all the means that they have.
Then be comforted, said Elrond, for there are other powers and realms that you know not, and they are hidden from you. Anduin the Great flows past many shores, ere it comes to Argonath and the gates of Gondor.
Still it might be well for all, said Gloin the Dwarf, if all these strengths were joined, and the powers of each were used in league. Other rings there may be less treacherous, that might be used in our need. The seven are lost to us. If Balin has not found the ring of Thror, which was the last, nought has been heard of it since Thror perished in Moria. Indeed, I may now reveal that it was partly in hope to find that ring that Balin went away.
Balin will find no ring in Moria, said Gandalf. Thror gave it to Thrain, his son, but not Thrain to Thorin. It was taken with torment from Thrain in the dungeons of Dol Guldur. I came too late.
Ah, alas, said Gloin. When will the day come of our revenge? But still there are the three. What of the three rings of the elves? Very mighty rings, it is said. Do not the elf lords keep them? Yet they, too, were made by the Dark Lord long ago. Are they idle? I see elf lords here. Will they not say?
The elves returned no answer. Did you not hear me, Gloin? Said Elrond. The three were not made by Sauron, nor did he ever touch them. But of them it is not permitted to speak. So much only in this hour of doubt I may now say. They are not idle, but they were not made as weapons of war or conquest. That is not their power. Those who made them did not desire strength or domination or hoarded wealth, but understanding, making and healing, to preserve all things unstained. These things the elves of Middle-earth have in some measure gained, though with sorrow. But all that has been wrought by those who wield the three will turn to their undoing, and their minds and hearts will become revealed to Sauron if he regains the one. It would be better if the three had never been. That is his purpose.
But what then would happen if the ruling ring were destroyed as you counsel? Asked Glóin.
We know not for certain, answered Elrond sadly. Some hope that the three rings, which Sauron has never touched, would then become free, and their rulers might heal the hurts of the world that he has wrought. But maybe when the one has gone, the three will fail, and many fair things will fade and be forgotten. That is my belief. Yet all the elves are willing to endure this chance, said Glorfindel, if by it the power of Sauron may be broken, and the fear of his dominion be taken away for ever. Thus we return once more to the destroying of the ring, said Aristor, and yet we come no nearer. What strength have we for the finding of the fire in which it was made? That is the path of despair.
Of folly, I should say, if the long wisdom of Elrond did not forbid me. Despair or folly, said Gandalf. It is not despair, for despair is only for those who see the end beyond all doubt. We do not. It is wisdom to recognize necessity when all other courses have been weighed, though as folly it may appear to those who cling to false hope. Well, let folly be our cloak, a veil before the eyes of the enemy, for he is very wise and weighs all things to a nicety in the scales of his malice. But the only measure that he knows is desire, desire for power, and so he judges all hearts. Into his heart the thought will not enter that any will refuse it, that having the ring we may seek to destroy it. If we seek this, we shall put him out of reckoning.
At least for a while, said Elrond. The road must be trod, but it will be very hard, and neither strength nor wisdom will carry us far upon it. This quest may be attempted by the weak with as much hope as the strong. Yet such is oft the course of deeds that move the wheels of the world. Small hands do them because they must, while the eyes of the great are elsewhere.
Very well, Master Elrond, said Bilbo suddenly. Say no more. It's plain enough what you're pointing at. Bilbo the silly hobbit started this affair, and Bilbo had better finish it, or himself. I was very comfortable here, and getting on with my book. If you want to know, I'm just writing an ending for it. I had thought of putting, and he lived happily ever afterwards to the end of his days. It's a good ending, and none the worse for having been used before. Now I shall have to alter that. It doesn't look like coming true. And anyway, there will evidently have to be several more chapters if I live to write them. It's a frightful nuisance. When ought I to start?
Boromir looked in surprise at Bilbo, but the laughter died on his lips when he saw that all the others regarded the old hobbit with grave respect.
Only Glóin smiled, but his smile came from old memories.
Of course, my dear Bilbo, said Gandalf. If you had really started this affair, you might be expected to finish it. But you know well enough now that starting is too great a claim for any, and that only a small part is played in great deeds by any hero. You need not bow, though the word was meant, and we do not doubt that under jest you are making a valiant offer. But one beyond your strength, Bilbo, you cannot take this thing. It has passed on. If you need my advice any longer, I should say that your part is ended, unless, as a recorder, finish your book and leave the ending unaltered. There is still hope for it, but get ready to write a sequel when they come back.
Bilbo laughed.
I've never known you give me pleasant advice before, he said. As all your unpleasant advice has been good, I wonder if this advice is not bad. Still, I don't suppose I have the strength or luck left to deal with the ring. It's grown, and I have not. But tell me, what do you mean by they?
The messengers who are sent with the ring.
Exactly. And who are they to be? That seems to me what this council has to decide, and all that it has to decide. Elves may thrive on speech alone, and dwarves endure great weariness,
but I'm only an old hobbit, and I miss my meal at noon. Can't you think of some names now, or put it off till after dinner?"
No one answered.